The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
It's time for our weekly medical consultation with Dr. Ray Wally. And today we're going to talk about palpitations. Something that some people make a joke of, Ray. Don't be giving me palpitations by saying that to me. But how serious a medical condition can a palpitation be? What is it?
Palpitation is the sensation of your heart beating. Nothing more than that. So we'll all know when we're doing exams, maybe, or if you've unfortunately been dehydrated, probably out drinking too much, possibly too much coffee or too much tea, the caffeine element in both, or a few other causes may give you what you feel as either extra beats, a skipping of beat, but often people find it difficult to describe.
It's a consciousness of your heart been there, I suppose, that most of the time you're not aware of.
Exactly. Your heartbeat is normally between about 60 and 100 beats per minute. And basically, you know, that's the normal rate. And often, unfortunately, if you've had a stressful day, if you've done more exercise than you're necessarily fit for, we've given some of the other reasons. But sometimes there can be medical reasons. They're the tip of the iceberg. Like, you know, there are very, very few people with palpitations who have serious causes to it. That's important to emphasise.
So if you suffer from them, if you've had them, you're not suddenly be panicking listening to this and heading off to your emergency department.
No, exactly. Unfortunately, the panicking, the anxiety will add to the adrenaline and that'll increase it more. Certainly, unfortunately, if you have a blackout or if you feel dizzy or you're getting a bit of chest pain or breathlessness, or it's persistent or recurrent, certainly you should go for a medical practitioner, GP, to review you. And if you come into us, we'll take a history. We'll ask you to maybe pat it out on the table, meaning you can have regular or you can have irregular, literally patting it out. And we will probably do a list of blood tests. So things we're looking for is anemia, making sure your thyroid is normal. With an overactive thyroid, you can get an increase in heart rate. With an underactive thyroid, you can get a slowing of heart rate. We may do an ECG, which is electrical tracing of your heart, looking for what is the normal tracing.
Okay. Just go through some of the other symptoms. Would it always be in your chest or in your heart, or could there be other things as well, other areas of the body where you could feel palpitations?
Generally, it's in your chest, but you might get people saying that they lie down at night and they can hear their heartbeat. Usually those people have had a stressful day or something else is going on in their life that they're making their health radar more alert. So you may feel a sensation in your neck or in your ear. Usually the sensation is in your chest.
Your neck or ear? Why would it be in your neck or ear?
Because you're lying down and basically you're effectively, you know, if you're lying down, you're on your side, your left-hand side predominantly, you'll feel as if you've got the pulsing of your carotid pulse. The carotid artery is in your neck and obviously the carotid artery connects to your heart and you might just get the normal sensation. The majority of these things are because you've got a heightened awareness. It's a very much a minority where there will be a pathological reason to it.
Yeah, you talk about strenuous exercise. So, for example, if you went for a run and you weren't running regularly, by the time you're absolutely exhausted, you stop, you probably will feel your heart beating. You'll be conscious of it because you might be up at about 160, 170 beats a minute.
And equally, unfortunately, with people, if they aren't fit and healthy or they're not the right body mass index, meaning if they're obese, and there can be other causes to it. So, for example, as we get older, the most common irregular heartbeat is atrial fibrillation, especially as you get old. That has an incidence of about 2 in 100. And that can
be deadly, can't it?
It can be. You can throw off a clot and it can be associated with other. You've got valvular atrial fibrillation, meaning when a person comes into us, we make sure that they don't have a valvular problem. We're listening to the heart sounds. We're listening for the whooshing of the heart to make sure there's no valvular problems. We may be basically checking out that the person doesn't have other symptoms like pneumonia, things like pulmonary embolus and overactive thyroid again. And certainly in those circumstances, which tend to be in older people, you know, we'd be referring the person in for an assessment such that they probably will be put on an anticoagulant because, as you say, you can throw off a clot.
Do some medications cause palpitations?
If you had somebody who is on a thyroid medication and they're over provided with L-troxin if they're underactive, if you have somebody, one of the blood tests we're doing on people are biochemical things. So we're checking potassium levels, probably magnesium levels. So we make sure that the biochemistry is normal. And certainly, I'm afraid if you've got somebody who has been not hydrating properly or They've been over diaries, over sort of on water tablets. That could change the biochemistry. So it can be a knock-on effect.
Okay, but what about things, medication, say like an asthma inhaler? Could that actually, if you use your asthma inhaler to sort out your breathing, could that have a byproduct or effect of actually affecting a palpitation in your heart?
True, 100%. We're talking about a salbutamol inhaler. The salbutamol inhaler is probably the most overused inhaler inappropriately. There are a lot of people out there who've bought them in Spain or bought them on the black market, and they believe when they get a bit breathless that they basically use this. Now, what they should be doing is, if they get a bit breathless, the majority of people are again or using them inappropriately. So what I would tend to advise those people is look, if you're on an inhaler, just make sure you're using it properly.
But what is using it properly?
Well, salbutamol inhaler is predominantly used in asthmatic patients. Asthmatic patients are people who've got reversible airways obstruction, and they're used for urgent use. But the majority of people, if they're needing recurrent salbutamol inhaler, will be on a preventative inhaler, and they shouldn't be needing the salbutamol inhaler. But it's nearly a badge of honour for people to overuse their salbutamol. We've had a few, obviously, cases where we've had athletes overusing them supposedly as well. But what a salbutamol can do, it's a beta agonist. And what happens is it connects up with a receptor in your heart, which makes your heart go faster. And if you basically heart going faster, you will get the sensation of palpitations.
But what about cold and cough remedies? Can they do it to you?
Certainly, again, basically, there can be constituents in the cough remedies if you're overutilizing them. Certainly, unfortunately, you know, why you will have your pharmacist going through the indications for a cough bottle is that people can overutilize them. They can get addicted to them, and certainly they can do that as well. So again, caution with that. And a majority of people don't need cough bottles. Literally, just honey, lemon, hot water is sufficient to provide an antidote to your cough.
Okay, let's go through it again, how you prevent. So it's stay well hydrated, but avoid things like alcohol in excess, tea and coffee because of the caffeine, avoid drugs. The big thing you seem to be emphasising though is reduce stress and anxiety.
And equally, eating regular meals so you don't get hypoglycemia, a good night's sleep, increasingly one of the most important things known to cause everything, unfortunately, is a poor night's sleep. And within this, unfortunately, we're having increased people coming to doctors using recreational drugs, and it is a side effect of that.
Actually, as you hear, just when you mentioned sleep, irregular sleep, is that as damaging? Because sometimes, you know, if you maybe have had a couple of bad nights sleep, you make up for it with a good long sleep, 9-10 hours, and you can still feel as bad as if you'd only had 4 or 5 or 6 hours sleep.
Having just finished Professor Walker's book on sleep, basically, you never supposedly catch up in your sleep. Now, there's two aspects to this. There's a brain aspect and the physical exhaustion aspect. Possibly it has helped you get away from the physical exhaustion, but you don't really replace that sleep. What you're meant to do is get 6 to 8 hours sleep per night. And anybody who is not doing that, unfortunately, is shortening their life. So, for example, there are more studies out there in the last few years that people who are working night shifts, who are working irregular hours, they're shortening your life by up to 10 years.
Okay, maybe that's the topic we'll come back and discuss on another day, how you can actually get your sleep into a pattern, how you can get aid in getting your sleep and the damage it does. We'll do that another day. For now, I'm going to leave it there. This is our weekly medical consultation with Dr. Ray Wally.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.